Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great too.
I love being immersed in practice.
Me too. Say like an email class, for instance, along with everything else we're doing?
Yes. Email class, year-long retreat.
Uh-huh.
I've been listening to archives from 2016. It's fun.
What were we doing in 2016? Pretty much the
same
thing.
We were doing the 15th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk, which very exciting, on the 15th of October. And you had invited people from all over the country to come on such a glorious celebration year.
Wow. And they did. They
yes.
did come. Yeah.
Yes.
And it was
yes.
glorious. And
yes.
it still is. That isn't that amazing? It, 15 years, and here we are at this point, and still just trucking along. But if people are following what's happening in Cantalomba, in spite of everything that is happening in the world, you know, they just keep right on getting better and better and better.
Yes, yes, they do.
Yeah.
And I want to encourage folks to get in the queue tonight, Sherry.
Yeah, because so otherwise we'll threaten them. We'll just sit here and talk, and then they'll look for an archive, and they'll get this, and they'll say, what the heck is that about? So, yeah, they've been getting the queue.
Great. And I have an announcement.
Mm.
Meditation is one of the most effective ways to train the attention to be with present moment experience. Join Sangha for our virtual meditation groups. These are conference call meditation sessions that take place 7 days a week. And for more information about this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
yeah,
if you'd like to talk...
Nothing like it.
Nothing like it. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry this evening, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. All right.
Or longer if there's, you know, if there are only two people, we're going to talk a lot longer than that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Here we
Let's
go.
Let's get going here. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Michael, it's Todd on Gabriela Island.
Hey.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Sherry.
Are you having a gorgeous day today?
Stunningly gorgeous. Thank you. We're very close.
Yep, that's how I know these things.
Yeah, I'm just up the road in a way. Well, actually,
that's right.
A couple ferries, I believe.
Just up the water.
Uh-huh. There you go. Just up the water, having a glorious day. Yeah. Just laying here with my cat on my lap, enjoying the radio show.
Mm.
You.
What's going on?
I was really appreciating this morning, year-long retreat discussion about not proselytizing our practice, in quotations, preaching about it, and just twinkling. And it was the last conversation, I think there was talking about, we have such an intimate relationship with the intelligence that animates us.
Mm-hmm.
And ego can get a hold of that, and, you know, just muddy it right up, make it not maybe seeking as a practice.
You know, Todd, you're starting to kind of strobe for me.
Oh, good.
I've been with you right along. Oh, okay.
Let me move my phone. I had that last night while my reflector listening buddy call. Is that better?
So far, you sound great.
Good. I moved it to a higher spot. Did you catch most of that?
Yes, I did. Yes, my part that I liked from it was the having a love affair with the intelligence that animates, right?
And I think it was Ashwini that was reflecting of, you know, that's such an intimate thing. We don't, there's, maybe only ego feels the need to want to share that in whatever parameters with other people, but there's intimate things in our lives that we just keep to ourselves. And in practice, early in practice, I wasn't able to follow that guideline. It was never helpful. And I didn't get a very...
And Todd, I think that you've hit the nail on the head, as they say there. That's what ego's interest is.
Yes.
It's not actually, I mean, your motivation would be because this has helped you to end suffering, and so you would like everybody to have that experience. That would be your motivation. Ego's motivation is it won't work.
Yeah. It won't work. Exactly. And you over the years in individual guidance and in group guidance and you know, Sangha guidance have guided so beautifully, and Ashwini as well, as practice to hold that in a privileged environment sense. And it's been so helpful for me to be able to live a spiritual life and not allow, as best as I can, ego to get a little foothold, as you said. Like, I think the last discussion was, you know, where I've got folks that also practice Buddhism or another form of practice, and then, you know, we start having discussions, and you're kind of like, oh, that's a bit of a slippery slope, because...
Yeah.
You know, ego can just go, wow, great. Yeah, you know, you're talking about Soto, and you're talking about Zen, and you're talking about whatever. And before you know it, it's there's separation.
Personality.
Right?
Yep, personalities come in.
Ego
gets into the party, and things are going to go downhill right from there. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I remember somebody, I don't even remember who said this to me, but years ago, some guy, this particular topic came up, and he said, yeah, you know, Sangha's getting together. What are you going to do? Get together and talk about sitting? And I just thought that's really so perfect. I mean, you know, you can get together with anybody as people, but to get together as Sangha or to even to do things as a Sangha, you know, that's... You mentioned, Michael mentioning the bridge walks, and boy,
right.
that was a really rugged place for us in practice, because high level. Suddenly, all these people who know each other in a privileged, very privileged environment sort of way are in a in quote social situation, and how is that going to go? And you know, over time. Because people are steeped in the importance that and the power of the privileged environment, people will hold to it. And I think that's been what has saved our Sangha for going in directions that other Sanghas have fallen into that have been made everything unhappy.
Right. And I have had the honor and privilege to attend those in-person bridge walks in San Francisco. And the first one, I was fairly new to practice, and it was, and I think we had a group before, because I think we went to the monastery, and then, I remember going to the monastery, and then we went from the monastery to the bridge walk and back to the monastery, but there was a group right before, and there was some new practitioners like myself, and you were facilitating, and we had such an incredible group about how to be social but not be a personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
how to be
so
together.
Helpful, Sherry. Yeah.
Yeah, my teacher used to say to us, could you go out there and not be weird? Could you please?
I'm sorry,
because
that is brilliant.
Yeah, because people, you know, there's this stiffness of, I'm going to keep the privileged environment, and the self-consciousness is just horrific.
Off the charts.
And so, how can you be there, be present, engage,
right.
participate,
mm-hmm.
without allowing ego into the interaction. It is high level.
It's the highest level.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we talk about, you know, sitting meditation, walking meditation, working meditation, and then people meditation.
Yeah,
that is the highest level of being, trying to stay present in the interaction with another human being. And at the bridge walk, there were hundreds of us, you know. the first one I went to, Sherry, I'll tell you, you're right. I was so self-conscious, and I was, you know, I didn't, I must have been weird because I didn't know how to act because I didn't have enough practice under my belt. I didn't, you know, I couldn't really, I didn't anyway. But as practice went on, and I got to go to more bridge walks and more retreats and visiting monk and you name it, I loved the bridge walks. I just felt so at ease, and I think one of the guidances was just see how it is to interact with someone heart to heart rather than ego to ego. And then someone said, well, how do you know? And you said, you'll know. If you're paying attention, you'll know. Mm-hmm. The person's like, really? He goes, yeah, just watch. You got to pay attention, though. Because if you go off, ego's got you, right? If you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
And then it's ego to ego.
Yeah, right. And the thing that we get in those kinds of interactions is ego is always paying attention. We just drift off for a second.
It's so true.
Right there in the
so
middle
true.
Of everything. Yeah.
Well, I can't recall them, but I did have, I'm sure, a few skillful interactions, and there were some course corrections and maybe a note on the message board. Who knows? But I appreciated mm-hmm. all of it.
Yeah. It's all helpful. What we want most is to wake up and end suffering,
yeah.
everything is helpful. Just,
it's true.
If we're here, we're going to see something. It could be hard and painful. You know, ego is going to jump on us and try to beat us up over it. Could be, you know, just wonderful. But it'll mm-hmm. be something. If we're here, we're going to see something. If we're not, we're not going to see much of anything.
Yeah, both those experiences, for sure. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's great chatting with you, and great being connected to Sangha, and just great to being a part of this Sangha.
All right, well, pet the little kitty cat for us.
His name is Otter.
We're glad he's with us. Yes, Otter.
I'm very happy with him. He's just been a delight.
A wonderful companion.
Oh, they are, aren't they? So anyway, you have a great rest of the evening.
Thank you, Todd. You too.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for joining us, Todd. And Sherry, I remember the guidance at the bridge walk, one of the ones I recall, was to just talk about now, just talk about sort of present moment things that are right in front of me. And that was really valuable.
Yeah, it's always true, isn't it? Now, at the bridge walk, it's really true, right? Because we had so much going on that there was plenty to converse about. Once we get the hang of it, there's always plenty to converse about without going off into ego land. Always. It's a beautiful day. Gorgeous sunset. You know, we can talk about the weather. Because we can talk about it with such enthusiasm and gratitude.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Diane in Colorado.
Hey, Diane.
Hey. Doing cue practice, so I might see something, you know?
Yeah. We can too, don't we?
as you just suggested. And I had this whole question I wanted to ask earlier, and of course it's not here at the moment, but what I was noticing with the year-long setting my alarms and doing the practice, I think as other people have said, I can completely delight in and feel don't know, I think I'm present with the thing in the natural world that I've chosen to spend time with when mm-hmm. the alarm goes off. And I don't think this is what you're pointing to when you say, I don't know exactly what the words are in the instructions, but tap into your common essence. What comes to me or came to me is just that we're all from the earth. That's how we all got here.
So you can, pretty much tap into anything, right? And know that it is a shared essence.
Yeah, it's a lot easier when it's a tree or a tomato in the garden, you know, a living thing versus a car.
Although, if we spend a little time with it, we can quickly get to there isn't actually anything. We call that thing a car, but there isn't really any such thing. It's all those different parts. And all those different parts, if we trace them back, we would get to that same, they are all of the living planet.
Oh, yes. I mean, ultimately, everything that's here came from the earth, whether it's man-made or not. It's just it's easier to connect with something that's closer to its original form.
Yeah.
But I think you were pointing at something else, aren't you?
Something other than connecting with shared essence?
Well, no, I think your words were, or Ashwini's words were, connecting with shared essence, and I guess any shared essence. I mean, the whole thing of we're all one is not something that I have felt that on rare occasions. That's not that. Those aren't the words that I would use to describe the we're all from the earth and I'm from the earth just like this. Just like this leaf is.
Yeah, and yet it's saying the same thing, isn't it? It's just having a different, feeling about it or different sense of it. Takes a person to a slightly different place, but to say we are all of... to say we're all of the earth or we are all of a shared essence is really the same statement, isn't it?
I guess I don't feel it that way. I can be of the earth, the berry can be of the earth, but that doesn't mean we're one. It means we have a common source, which is the earth, but that doesn't make me the same as the berry or the berry the same as me.
Right. Well, until we get to essence. So if we were to say, now, you know, if you go with a tree or a tomato vine, that which animates that tree, the life that is that tree or that tomato vine, is the life that is you. Does that feel true to you?
Well, yes, in the sense that it's all coming from the earth. The food that supports me comes from the earth, as do I. As
yes.
does the sustenance for the tomato vine.
Right. Yeah, and for me... It takes me to a place of, well, there's the earth. Yes, we can say that, you know, that certainly our bodies are that, and our bodies are food for the life force that animates us.
Oh, interesting.
And so if we start getting into that direction, and we're looking at or trying to sense our way into the energy that is the life of everything. I mean, Ashwini is a student of physics. I am not, but I think if we, you know, it's my the closest I can get is, if we imagine that everything is pink, right? Every atom, the smallest place that we can get to, whatever is inside an atom, all of it is pink. Everything is pink because we know everything is made up of the same
components.
Components, yeah. And so if they were all pink, then we actually wouldn't be able to tell anything apart. It would just be all pink. We have the ability, as human beings, of course, and other sentient beings do as well, to turn things, because of the mind, to turn things into various, you know, that's a tree, and that's a tomato, and that's a dog, and that's a human, and that's a whatever. And that's our ability to turn what is essentially all pink into those objects which we then perceive. But our perception of them and our labeling of them, giving them, you know, being able to give them a shape and a size and a color. And I was just looking at this the other day at a cousin who was colorblind. And that was always so fascinating. We would have these conversations and, I mean, he just didn't see it. He couldn't. Those colors were just absolutely unavailable to him. And teaching him to dress was quite a challenge because, of course, he would come up with some really interesting combinations, right? And so what for me was just natural and obvious because I could turn to anybody else in the room and say, is that green? And they would say, oh, yeah, that's green. But that would not necessarily be his experience. I can't remember what the exact colors are that they can't do. But so long diatribe there. Our ability to turn things into things doesn't negate the fact that it is all one essence.
Okay, I think what I need to do is listen to this again and see where I am and call back.
Okay, and you have inspired me, Diane, because I was just having a conversation, I think yesterday, with Ashwini about this and asking her if she thought it would be helpful to do a guided imagery for people to assist in moving to that place that we are describing, a place that cannot actually be pointed at or described or talked about, cannot be made into an object, and yet is something that we can recognize as our being. So I you've inspired me. I think I'm going to go ahead and do that. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do what you said, because that would be very interesting for me.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
We have a deal.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
We have a deal.
All right. Go happy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Diane. And that was fascinating, Sherry. I enjoyed that exploration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good word, because that's what practice is, isn't it? It's just kind of feeling our way into, well, what about, yeah.
Yes, yes. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hi there. This is Naomi from Massachusetts.
Hey, Naomi.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to give an update, and it goes a little bit along the lines of what we're discussing here.
Good.
So, as you might remember, it's been a while. I've been practicing receiving love from life. And you might remember that the way that I do it is that when I'm either starting a meditation or doing walking meditation, I kind of try to connect, and then life will say to me, "Hey, Naomi, do you want some unconditional love?" I've been doing this now for like 1.5 years, and initially I couldn't do it at all. Now it's just kind of, "Yay, come on, give me my daily dosage, please." And so I kind of like get filled up, and it's an amazing feeling. And then I had a little bit of a growth progression, if you want, and now I have moved on to the second phase of the exercise, so to say, of practice, is that in my mind's eye, I see myself in a mirror, and I see myself, and I see myself with all the sub-personalities that we had during the Summer of Sangha. So I've been doing this for 6 months now. Mm-hmm. And then, so Naomi asked Naomi, right? "Hey, Naomi, do you want some love?" Well, it's self-love now, right? And that was, as you might recall, very, very difficult. In fact, during the Summer of Sangha, it was the first time I'd ever given myself any self-love. Like,
mm-hmm.
But it's getting easier.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, it's just the most beautiful feeling ever of warmth coming from my heart into my heart. And what I've started to realize, going along with what you guys were just discussing, is that all of a sudden I'm like, it all kind of flows one into another. The love that I just received from life and the love that Naomi is giving Naomi, it's all oneness. It's all the same.
All one love, isn't it?
It just completely all confounds itself. And then just recently, a message that comes through is, it's not really words, but the feeling of it really is, be kind.
Mm.
And it's nearly like the status of be kind. So I've been going around all day whenever I need to make a decision. I'm like, what's the kind decision? And obviously, I'm human. It doesn't always work. But one area where I had been working on in a parallel kind of observing was that with my rehab for my disability, I had been like kind of, you know, type A, let's get going. And some days are kind of like really, really difficult for me. And you know, I still get up, I still go do. And now I'm like kind of, hey, you know what, take your time. And the absolutely most amazing thing that has dawned on me is that the outcome is the same, because the kind thing is not potato couch or couch potato, I'm not quite sure how you guys say it.
Naomi, hang on. The kind thing is not what?
It's not just to lie on a couch all day long. What is kind is it is still to do what's good for me, right? Still to do the rehab. But it's to do it, I just say, just do what you can do. And in the end, the outcome is the same, but the process is so different.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So first of all, I have to tell you, I just love it that Squim Washington, our town motto is be kind. So when I first drove into this town and saw the signs on the streets, be kind, I thought, okay, I could live there. And so I want to go back to what you were describing, because it's so important. because I'm going to project that the connection that you have made is that you, first of all, you're walking around and you see a tree, and it's and that tree says to you, hey Naomi, you want some unconditional love? And you go, well, sure, why not? And and there it is, right? And then you move to that exercise of looking in your mind's eye, looking into the mirror and seeing the various aspects of you. Mm-hmm. And then, pardon me?
Yeah.
And then what was available to you is that same process was now coming from you. Now you can say to these various aspects of Naomi, hey, how about some unconditional love? And they can say, yeah, let's do that, right? And we have a sense of the circle. Now, very often I'll tell people that where we're going in awareness practice is that we are recognizing ourselves as the unconditional love that can stand between a human being and the hateful conditioning that they have been subjected to.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, which is what you're describing.
Exactly. Yeah. It is exactly that. And it works for everything in life. So what comes to mind is yesterday, because I'm a human being, I had to have an appointment. I had to have an appointment change. So I call up and I say, hey, I'd like to have appointment change. And the woman is blatantly lying to me on the phone. And so I'm like kind of, absolutely what you said. I come up, well, and then we hang up. And then as soon as I had hung up, I had that kind of feeling. It wasn't guilt or anything like that. It was the same feeling of the unconditional love. And then I said, Naomi, not the best way to do that. Why would you want to surround yourself with reactivity and negativity? You weren't kind. You weren't in a be kind moment. And I said to myself, yeah, you know what? I could just have said, you know what? I'm going to call back later. And then that's the end of it. And mm-hmm. So it goes for the big things. It goes for the little things. It goes for every day that happens in life. And I just was saying to myself, that serenity, when I can really just say, you know what, this doesn't seem to be working, I'm going to call back later. And I wish for myself with self-love that I'll be able to get to that point, because I know that ultimately that's where I want to be in life, is that serenity and that grace, because grace is being able to just say, I don't know where you're coming from, why you're lying to me. It doesn't even have any importance, but my ego is not going to be in there. And then what I have for my motto now is, if it's not kind, it's ego.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree 1,000%. And you said something else there that I want to underline, because it's critical for all of us. And that is, you recognized, whoa, I was really not kind there. I was not the way I want to be. That's not how I want to be in life. There's no self-hatred. There's no blame. There's no guilt. There's no punishment. There's no what's the matter with you. That was wrong. You shouldn't have. There's none of that. And so you're free without all of that being added on and introduced into the moment. You're free simply to say, yeah, that's not how I want to be. And then you can just know in that moment how you do want to be, and you will take another opportunity to practice being that, and you will continue practice being that without self-hatred until you are able to just simply be kind everywhere all the time. And that will happen.
Yeah.
I trust that it will happen for all of us. I could say I could pray for that every day for myself and for everyone else.
You know, and I love the word that you used, which was free, because it is free in the sense of feeling free and light and flying, but it's free in the sense of the freedom to just say, I'm choosing that. I'm not going to get wrapped up in it. That's my choice. I'm making a choice. This is the energy that I want to emit in the world, and that is my freedom. And I do kind of see from the reaction other people have towards me that how powerful it is to emit that, because mm-hmm. other people automatically, it's like being a magnet, basically. People want to feel it.
Yes, exactly so. Yeah, it's contagious. And that's the kind of contagion that we want to have take over the entire world. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And you know, with all the political divide, at the end, it really doesn't care. The love that fills up, it doesn't care about that.
It doesn't care
where the other person is coming from.
That's right. It doesn't care. It is love. End of story. It is not conditional. That's why we call it unconditional love. Nobody has to meet a standard in order to deserve it. It just is. It's what we are. It's there for all of us.
Giving love to myself, which is new for these past 6 months, really enhances that for me personally. It has enhanced the opportunity to see that and to see oneness.
Yes,
because I'm
exactly.
able to see myself as being worthy and worthy of love and not disvalued for myself and perhaps everybody who had a difficult, you know, growing up, where we weren't necessarily, I was not told that I was anything great. So filling myself with love and self-love is just saying, you're worth it. You are worthy of love.
Yes, and we can see that is true for everyone and everything.
Everyone. That's why it doesn't matter.
That's right, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, my dear.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Go happy.
Yes, you too. Go happy. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night.
Night-night.
Thanks for joining us, Naomi. That was a fabulous conversation. Yes. And Sherry, we're going to hear from Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Phil, who is here to speak with us about her experience of the Practice History Postcards. Welcome, Phil.
Yeah, hi, Jen. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being with us to talk about it. You are absolutely the best candidate for that.
Well, you know, I love the postcards, and I'm really grateful for them because, you know, what I just looking at, you know, when you asked the question, it was like, oh yeah, let's see how I experienced them, and it's very interesting because, at least to me anyhow, because when I look at them, you know, or read them, and it feels like there's a noticing that nothing has actually changed in practice since those early days, and yet it seems in a lot of ways everything has changed. So it's kind of a miracle just to see those. It's like, you know, it brings up the memories of the years past, you know, in practice, but it's not just memories. It's like a realization that we're living the postcards now, in a sense, you know, that we did then, you know, it's a way of doing it now. Everything's the same. I mean, you know, we have a garden, we have a farm, we've had that since the beginning, and you know, it's just like, you know, retreats, meditation. It's all a part of our lives.
And I think that's what's so fun about it, Phil, is that the history of the practice completely underscores exactly what you're saying. In fact, I think that was one of the sort of the literal premise of one of the recent ones, that so much changes, you know, but the essence never does. It's
right
there, untouched. And I'm not going to give it away because I think it's going to be one of the upcoming ones, but just having that experience where you see a peace quote, or you hear the guy talking about something, or, you know, watch the video of this or that and realize, oh my goodness, that is exactly how we have been practicing since the very beginning of practice.
Yes, exactly. And it kind of seems like, you know, as we practice too, everything, it just kind of practice expands. And what we, you know, part of maybe the essence or the newness is that there's, you know, we've grown in awareness and, you know, more fully, it feels like as a Sangha, we're more fully present and, you know, it kind of feels like we've become practice and it seems, you know, one thing I was thinking, it seems like practice, you know, it's like planting a small seed and if we show up and keep showing up, practice just grows and grows and awareness grows and it's just exciting.
It is exciting. It is. That really resonates what you're describing, that it feels like there's so much maturity in Sangha over the years. And that does feel like it's really reflected in that when you look back at the history and so much, it's like a micro experience of what is often said, especially in places like Buddhism, but that's the spiritual practice that I know. So maybe it's another one too, but that sense of so much gratitude for all that has come before, for all the folks for, you know, in this case, 2,500 years who have been practicing all the way along to have carried it to us in this moment. And for me, there's such a sense of that in looking back at our Sangha and those folks who, you know, were putting up those rammed earth walls in Murphy, California. And the other thing that's so beautifully depicted in all of it is, and then not holding on to it when it was time for that property to be handed over to the next stewards, that's what happened. And now practice lives somewhere else physically, but it's always in the same place in terms of process.
Yes, because as you're saying that, it reminds me that, you know, particularly when we were building that building and everything else we've done was done completely out of love, completely.
Absolutely.
And it just created the, you know, more and more love as we kept going and going and going. And so that's, you know, it's the love that stayed and stays and goes with us. And, you know, it isn't the physical, you know, like building or place. And yet all the love stays there and all the love goes with us. And it's all, I mean, that's just how it feels. And it felt that from the beginning the magic that goes with practice, wherever practice is, wherever Sangha is, wherever we are.
Boy, that is so beautifully put and very much my experience. I mean, certainly having, you know, quote, worked, being in working meditation anywhere, that experience of the deep love that it all comes from. And then people used to say that all the time, you know, in places of practice, say at the monastery, for example, coming there and feeling like, I mean, you can just feel the love in this place. You can, everything around it is a manifestation of that love. It's in physical form. And now, again, here at the farm, you know, that same sense of all the love that goes into the land, into the place, into the, you know,
Yeah, exactly, and that's what the, you know, by having those those postcards, it just brings you all that back, you know, brings the it not just back, but back to the now, right here.
Exactly. I love that point that it's not really reading our history. It's reading now. It's the process mm-hmm. that's happening now. I loved that one when we stumbled on the ladder and realized, you know, I wonder where else that ladder shows up. And there she is, you know, in picture after picture after picture of all uh-huh. these places that she's just been there quietly behind the scenes playing uh-huh. her part, you know, her love in the program without any, you know, needing any credit or just, but there's uh-huh. literally the very same ladder that's been in all of those places in practice with us.
Yes, yes, yeah. It is just mind-blowing when you, you know, really think about it. It's like, and what I guess I was also seeing is the awareness is has grown yeah. so much for all of us. You know, I was mm-hmm. thinking like or looking at how I think like we started Sangha, you know, in Ad Sangha around 1982, and that was before we even had the buildings and everything. And it was like you know, back to the planting of the seeds, and it just seems that yeah. as it grown, there's just greater and greater awareness, and it's kind of like a spiral, you know, everything's spiraling. It just doesn't let yeah. be still, you know. It's just yeah. The content could yeah. be different, but the practice is the same, and we just keep on practicing with all that love and kindness.
All that love, and as you said a few minutes ago, that just it spiral gets bigger and bigger and bigger. There's mm-hmm. more and more love available to us as Sangha
right.
and to all,
right.
really.
Yeah.
To all. Yeah.
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 So.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about it.
Yeah, and just we can all remember today, this here now, we are still creating
right.
with our own lives our postcards.
That is. Absolutely true. For the folks who are going to come, who are here right now and who are going to come after us.
That's yeah. right. Exactly.
We're holding that space in the way that people have for generations and generations for us.
Yes, that's yeah. wonderful. That's yeah. a wonderful mm-hmm. thing to just know. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, thank you, Jen.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil. Go happy.
You go happy, too. All of everybody go happy.
Everybody go happy. All right. And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Phil. And welcome back to Open Air. And that was fun and nostalgic, Sherry.
that was, you know, I was chuckling as I when Jen said those people who were there building those rammed earth walls, and I thought, yeah, that was Sister Phil.
Right.
That's who was there. Yeah, right from the very beginning of, you know, coming into meditation, so excited, saying, I found the place, I found the building, I found the center, and sure enough, it was our, you know, our original, and yeah, so yeah, a lot of yeah, good times. Good
yeah.
times.
Good
yeah.
times. All right, let's continue then with the next caller then, shall we?
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you double muted, perhaps?
Yes, please, I'm double muted.
Yes.
This is Paula.
Hey, Paula.
Hey, Sherry and Michael and everybody. Boy, that was fun listening to Sister Phil, and it just had flashbacks to the Bay Bridge walk, and
mm-hmm.
that's and I sometimes it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but then it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
in fact, recently, I can't remember if we talked about this anywhere, but we were down in the Bay Area. Oh, it must have been for the Vallombrosa retreat. And oh, it did. It came out on a postcard. We walked past one of our many Mountain View, California Zen centers, And we were recalling that it was in that very building that we were all sitting around and came up with the idea of having a fundraiser. And I think we checked with Jen, but I think the first fundraiser was a bridge walk. And the question was, was $25,000 just, you know, a ridiculous amount to think that we could generate with that kind of an activity? And then, of course, it went on to sustain the work in Cantaloupe for years.
Well, that's wonderful to reminisce over that. And to feel, and to, you know, sometimes I think, well, I haven't really been in the Sangha that long, and then I hear stuff like that, and I said, well, yes, I have.
Yes, actually, I
been
have.
Been around a long time now.
Yeah.
So, and it's so, I feel, I feel very privileged that I've had that opportunity to be with folks in the Sangha for, you know, various times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I'm very happy to be here, Sherry, and I did call in earlier because I had just been feeling like I needed as much support as I can get because I'm having a really hard time again physically. And
pain,
pain just off the charts. And but you know, on the other hand, I've learned a lot over the years, and you know, it's, I don't know, right? Recently, it's kind of felt like a roller coaster ride, and it's completely out of my hands in so many ways. I just, you know,
we could all say that, right? I mean, and realize, hopefully realize it, because to me there's great comfort in realizing it's out of our hands. You know, I have no control over anything. I actually don't. This is what I've got. The best I can do is to be with it. I haven't done anything wrong. I don't deserve this. There's none of that element to it. It's just this is the way it is. And now how can I be with it? How can I be with it with as much kindness and compassion for the human being as I can manage? That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that is the bottom line. But there's also, you know, there's that time when I just think, I just want it to be over. Yeah. And, you know, I just feel pretty depressed. But it doesn't last, you know, it doesn't hang on too long because I truly believe, or it's my experience that practice frees me from being stuck in that place where I just want my life to be over or something, you know, just to stop it because I can't stand it anymore. And yet, you know, it's a passing thing, and I realize that it's a passing thing.
It's a passing thing, and the difficulty is it's also a returning thing, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
So it's not like giving birth, you know, where you have all this excruciating pain and then you get a baby, right?
That's right. I'd take that in a day.
There's all this excruciating pain, and then it passes, and then it returns. And so it is hard. It's incredibly hard to keep a good spirit, to stay with the person and in that loving kindness, and not just get to the point of saying, I don't want to do this. You know, Paula, I often wonder this. I can't remember if we've ever had a conversation about this, but are there pain medications that you could take that would change that for you? And is it a matter of not wanting to take those because of what else they might do to you?
No, I do take pain medications, but they're a lot, you know, some of the ones are, you know, if you take them long enough, they don't work as well as they worked initially. And there's always the risk of, of just getting dependent on them. And, you know, it's,
And so, to explain that to me, because I think, I would probably quickly get to the place of, okay, so I'm dependent on it. I'm also dependent upon food and air and water and all kinds of things. So, but is part of that that it, there's a dependency and then they stop working and then you're kind of in worse shape than you were in before?
Well, that's a matter of opinion, even of physicians' opinions, because I have my family doctor who's or practitioner who prescribes help me with pain, has helped me with pain, and she has no problem with me taking what I take. And I saw another doctor this past week, and he basically, it wasn't a lecture, but he went over all the risks. Well, I'm quite well aware of all the risks, and it's really.
And the risks are. I'm sorry, but the risks.
Well, then eventually, they don't work as well, and so you need more. You need more medication because it doesn't work as well,
uh-huh.
And that's.
But is the concern that it would then affect you mentally, or that it would be? That it would cause you to be sick, or what is the current concern?
Mostly, I think
more?
It's mental. Is that somehow or other that you won't be able to tolerate, it won't help you enough, and then you'll just totally, you'll overdose, something like that.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I think that compassionate self-discipline helps a great deal with that. And,
yes.
The fellow I was talking to a couple of days ago, I'm sure he is a pain doctor specifically, so I'm sure he's had a lot of probably negative experiences with people having to take pain medicines. And,
And of course, we could wonder how much pain he's in on a regular basis.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, my heart went out to him after I left there because I thought, he deals with this all the time, and I could hear it in his voice as he was giving me all the horror of how it could be if I
mm-hmm.
got so, I was so dependent on it that I couldn't, stop taking it. So, but, I came right home and stopped taking it for a couple of days. And, I still had more pain, but I don't know. I guess I feel like there's some part of me that's incredibly strong. And
I think you can count on that. Yes. Yes. that is absolutely the case. No doubt about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
yet... And yet, we don't want to make it a contest, right? Yes, you're incredibly strong, but that doesn't mean that that you're required to suffer in ways that are unnecessary just because you are very strong.
I get to see characteristics, qualities about myself that I'm not always aware of. so there's sort of
yes.
this,
oh, I
you
bet.
Know, so,
sure.
I just,
yeah, sure. When we're driven to the edge, we see things about ourselves that we don't see when we are not at the edge.
Yeah, and to have someone, when he's like, you need to telling me all the dangers of it, and I saw that stubborn part of myself that came right home and said, I'm stopping it right now, and I'm going to prove I'm not addicted, I don't have to have it, I can live without it, but my, poor partner says, don't do that. You don't have to stop everything cold turkey. But
yeah,
I saw
yeah.
that quality in myself that's stubborn and just going to prove that I can. I don't. It's not an issue. But I got over that fast. I realized, that's really that's all ego stuff too.
Yeah.
Trying to be
yeah.
right, good person, and just hogwash.
Yeah, because this may be irresponsible of me to say, but we've known each other for a long time, and so you're used to that kind of thing. But you know, at a certain point, when we reach a certain age, addiction is probably not the worst thing for us to fear.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, for an 18-year-old, you know, who's otherwise healthy, or even a 40- or 50-year-old, we could say, well, you know, maybe that's something. But, you know, again, at a certain age and a certain physical condition, we could say, yeah, I'm not sure that's really going to be my top priority to worry about that. But,
yeah. Well, that's helpful, Sherry. Really, I appreciate your reflecting that all back to me, because it's helpful to hear it, because I found myself kind of in between, and you know, do I do it or not do it, or how am I going to manage, and struggling with that on top of just living with this, with the chronic pain. And I think I've, you know, I keep getting told by my partner here that, you know, I'm doing fine. And I just have to keep reminding myself that I'm doing fine. But some days, I mean, you know, sometimes like these last two or three weeks, and I'm having so, oh, I'm going to go, because look, it's 9 o'clock. I need to let you go.
No. Yeah. I mean, we can't talk all day, but, you know, or all night.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can finish that thought.
Well,
or I'll finish it for you. And
yeah,
that
okay,
is... So I know him, and he's a wise and kind guy. And so I think you can trust him to give you the straight scoop on stuff. And,
Mm-hmm. I believe that, too. I just, like I said, there's this real stubborn part of me that I haven't seen so much until... You know, I've had this come up and have to deal with it again. So,
I'm just trying to be reasonable. Yeah, exactly. Stubborn, you know, again, I go to that place of, okay, well, maybe interview that stubborn person and see how much pain she's in. Because it's really good, you know, it's really easy for us to have good ideas about somebody else's situation. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So let's talk to the person who's experiencing the pain and get that opinion, rather than somebody who, you know, is willing to sacrifice her for some kind of a principle or some kind of an idea about how things should be.
Yeah, good point.
Good.
Well, thank you. I'm deeply, deeply grateful to be able to get on and talk with you, and
well, it's
hear,
to
hear
talk
the
with
call.
You as always.
Just good. Wonderful.
Good.
Okay.
Right.
Take good care.
Take good care of yourself.
Show.
All right. Gosh, oh. Thank you, Paula. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Paula. And I found that conversation really insightful. Sherry, that was fabulous. So thank you both for that.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for everything.
Oh, my pleasure. And we are at the end of our show. And so thank you, Sherry. And thanks to everyone who joined us tonight.
Yes. Let's all go happy.
All right.
And
go
kind.
And
all
kind.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.